my pleasure to be here, that you don't you really don't need to see me, a speaker, out in front of your podium. So you can. This is 10 minutes ago. Well, and thanks for having me. I really appreciate you letting me plug in. Hey guys, if you want to mute that phone, it'd be perfect. We're good. Hey, now it's shocking for someone up north to say y'all, but my whole family's from Virginia, so I get it. And the name Pepper really is a God-given middle name, so it's kind of southern there. But I am really, really impressed with your program and what you all stand for and your state associations. Awesome, awesome. Regards from the tundra, the frozen tundra. Looks a tad bit warm down where you guys. I think it's going to feel like 105 or 107. Ours is just now starting to melt. So, yeah, you can chuckle. That's really not real. But realize when we have snow, it works for us up here. We've got this thing figured out. So you can have your heat. We'll keep our snow. This was interesting to me when I took a look at, wish I could join you. I have another charity event tonight. But to see that you only have one day below 50 where it stays, I figured you'd like to get a little picture of Green Bay, annual average, and right now feels like 68, but we've got 162 days where the low is below 32, so yeah, you can chuckle about that. What's real important to us in Green Bay? Well, Lambeau has the most beer taps of any stadium in the world, even more than Jerry's up there in Dallas. We've got more, and that's a picture worth taking there. That's one game. That was our current record. I know you've been to a few college keggers. You don't have to admit to it. We happen to lose this game, but 757 kegs. We're going to be in trouble if a picture's worth 1,000 words, because what you're going to do is watch a really fast slideshow or a real slow movie. It's my style. Why me? I'm cheap. This is what it's probably costing you to have me. I've got my Diet Coke popped, and we're good to go. Now, it's okay to laugh. I mean, well, first of all, I can't hear you. But now, that is a pretty funny slide there. Everybody remember from Sunday school. That's pretty good. But my obligatory one joke to start with, there's your Dairyland joke. And that is pretty cute, too, if you go with it. Why me? Well, this will be my 40th year in the NFL. Doesn't mean I'm right or wrong, but just means I've seen a lot of stuff and a whole lot of football games. One sideline was really particularly fun. And that was up at Jerry's place, so to speak. I say that with due respect. And that was Super Bowl 45, my wife, daughter, and son. Let's cut to the quick. We could talk football for a second. You know, the Packers had a pretty good year last year. In fact, the Packers have been in the playoffs 17 out of the last 23 seasons. And we had a little excitement last year. We had a real Hail Mary, but actually it was a Hail Rodgers to Rodgers because it was Aaron Rodgers. Thrown to Richard Rodgers in Detroit, and it was, you know, it was an untimed play. Unbelievable. And then we got into the playoffs, and we kind of had a Hail Janice, and you have no idea who Janice is, a up-and-coming receiver here. And then we had a real Hail Mary at the end of the game to Janice, and this didn't work too well. The next play was a Hail Larry, and that's really all I've got to say about that, and that was the end of our season. So another funny is, you know, you take a look at this, that sometimes you miss an opportunity, and opportunities don't always come that often to excel. So this was, oh, crap, that was today. So admittedly, my talk today is going to be pretty football and pretty helmet-centric, and admittedly, I do not know much about helmets outside of football, so if I was covering another sport, I would want to be prepared for that, and that's what we're going to talk about with this, with preparation. Ron Corson at Georgia is probably the expert with emergency medicine, NATA position papers, and you all have worked in many different sports than I have, and it gives a different challenge. I'm partial to Ron because I kind of like their logo. But this whole thing about caring for suspected injured spine, have you heard the latest? I was asked to do this talk in St. Louis last year at the NATA, and all of a sudden I hear all this mumbling about changing recommendations and protocols. Now, I have a few worded slides, and it's not your goal nor mine to read them all, but my goal is, you know, as said here, that we really don't need to just know about anatomic alignments, but we have to be mechanics. We have to know how to deal with our hands and tools. There are many ways to get to the same goal, and we absolutely have to realize that one size doesn't fit all. We got to stay flexible, tried and true techniques, and everybody has an opinion, but the bottom line is we have to do the best we can with what we have when we have it. My second goal is not to do this. I don't want to poke a hornet's nest. And, you know, when we start talking about relationships with EMS and the like, we could. At the NATA last year, just short of a year ago, there were no less than 6 spine-related talks. So obviously it's kind of a hot topic of what's going on. And I was kind of unaware. As I say, I was semi-clueless that there was a change in the EMS approach with spinal injuries. I didn't even realize that the NATA had reconvened the Interassociation Task Force. I was on the initial one. I didn't have hurt feelings, but I didn't realize. And they were about to announce new NATA recommendations at last year's very NATA. Now, this is the antique monograph. When I say antique, what, 15, 16 years older, it's gone. And now they're repositioning it. And you don't have to read this Google slide. But what I had done is I had Googled EMS longboard controversy, and a year ago there were 165,000 hits, so to speak, and yesterday 6,500. So maybe the controversy's gone down. Look at some of the things that came up a year ago on a Google search. I'm like, whoa, I didn't know about board to death and ditch the spine board, and what do you mean the evidence against backboards? I'm an athletic trainer. What am I missing here? And I started to realize the word that we all use, well, I didn't know it, is dogma. And dogma, as you see, is defined as a belief or a principle we always think is valid, whether it's accurate or not. It's just what we think is right. And as people say, it's how we've always done it. Well, now you certainly are there at your own conference. You're looking for some EBPs, and we really need evidence-based to improve patient outcomes. Well, guess what? We do the exact same thing in sports medicine. We do things the way we've always done it. And you young people have the goal and the challenge to think outside the box and improve this. And the demand for EBPs has certainly done that. Now, I started, again, for this preparation a year ago about the whole thing with longboards and EMS and reading behind the scene. And you look at some of these resource documents that EMS precautions and the use of the boards, and I was just really missing something. I didn't get it. And then I started to read what's the risk? And they talk about pain on the boards, unnecessary x-rays and respiratory and pressure sores, and were more and more. And I was scratching my head. And I really, no pun intended, I was scratching my head. Are we doing something wrong with our athletes? And I had to start to call around, and I said, no, I don't think so, but let's settle this like adults. We'll figure this thing out. And then out last year, approved January of last year, so it's a little over a year old, this EMS protocols and a policy statement. And again, no intent for you to read that, but we're going to do it my way. There it is blown up, but this is what we're looking at. Current lack of management practices that there's potential spinal injury without scientific support. Okay, so what's going on? Well, it demonstrates that some of this out-of-hospital care is causing harm. What kind of harm? Airways, and what are you talking about? Tissue ischemia and pain, and wow. I said, I'm behind the eight ball on this. This is the one that threw me, is however, true spinal immobilization is impossible. Now, we say we immobilize the spine. There's 31 segments. You really can't. We're not putting screws into them. They're really not immobilized. And EMS is using the catchword spinal motion restriction. I don't know if we have to come up with SMR as one of our new acronyms or not, but the long and short of it is we're trying to keep the spine safe, anatomic alignment, minimize movement. Yep, get it. But I don't know if we're ready to say that we're practicing SMR, but there you have it. So they're basically saying, well, we can't really immobilize the spine. We need to do SMR. In certain cases. Well, what are those certain cases? Well, you know, racing and rescue and Well, how about contact and extreme sports? Well, contact is, they say dance is contact, football is collision. So I think maybe we fall under the need to keep practicing spinal motion restriction. And so when should we do this? Well, with any of the following. Well, altered level of consciousness, of course. Midline spine, that's why we bring out the spine board. And focal neurologic signs, any numbness. Once again, that's why we bring out the spine board. And Lord forbid we have any of the last two. So in my mind, in athletics, what we've been doing, how we've been doing, kind of falls into these guidelines. Now, I talked to the EMS director in our area yesterday, and he said that pretty much they promote longboards as only a movement tool to pick somebody up. And this was the slide that he used at our state meeting about a month ago, and the highlighted in yellow, once extricated and moved, patient should be taken off the backboard or a scoop or whatever you're using. I'm not a big scoop fan, but all of that said, we don't want to leave someone on a spine board too long, and I don't think that happens in athletics. Usually when an athlete's coming in, it's on the fast track. So last year, just minutes before my talk, the NATA put out their recommendations, and these are kind of pepperized. You know, they were a paragraph each. Everybody should have an EAP. Yep. Ensure the EAP is reviewed. Got it. Proper assessment to activate the EAP. Yep. No problem. Equipment should be removed prior to transport. Equipment should be removed by at least three trained rescuers. Well, that's probably a fact. Be familiar with other equipment. That's what we're doing here. A rigid cervical stabilization applied. Yep. And they kept on going. And should the transport using rigid immobilization? Well, our EMS friend said we can't really immobilize or we're going to restrict movement from the field, minimize, yep, transport, have that plan, got it, most appropriate hospital, it's in your EAP, collaboration between the staffs and the coaches, yep, strong working. Like every paper always says, we need more research, got it. Well, with some pending amendments, which are coming out now, back to number four, equipment should be removed prior to transport. May not. How about we all decide on whether the equipment should be removed and when it should be removed and don't be mandating what the recommendation is? And I think that's where we're heading. Why me again? We've had about 14 guys in my 23 seasons, maybe 12 if I look back exactly, that have had their career ended because of some type of cervical dysfunction, fractured facets, fusions, etc. Now, certainly in this business, when you used to subscribe to Sports Illustrated, they would glorify the big hits. You got your free video, and you could see that the NFL, there's no sound to this, but the NFL used to promote these things. Maybe it wasn't the NFL, but everybody said, oh, look at this stuff. Well, now, certainly in this age and time, Al Toon was a player I worked with at the Jets. These photos are still popular, and it's, you know, you don't want to see them in, made as heroic hits. But there's one not too awful far away from you all, and these head-to-head contacts still happen. Here's the bottom line. Do you have an EAP, and do you have it, you know, you might have a ticking bomb, but you know how you're going to deal with it. Some things you can't be prepared for. This is Joe Andruzzi, one of our former players, playing with the New England Patriots a couple of years ago during the disaster at the Boston Marathon. Little did he know he would end up helping people get to emergency care. So you can't, there's always going to be the unexpected. And I can't emphasize this enough, to sit with your people. And you have to figure out who your people are, how many people you can invite in. Why do we discuss and practice? Again, it's the unexpected. Pretty cute picture now. I don't know who staged it, but that's unexpected. And how about this? I don't want, now that's not a good scene for a field, but I would much rather that scene than this scene. So which one of these do you want? You don't want that one. If you're going to be in control, this is the way to roll. Standard back in the day, how about this? 1940s. I picked that out of New York. No, I wasn't working here. I'm old, but I'm not that old. But this is Green Bay Packers. I mean, obviously, we've come a long way with how we deal with this stuff. Why do we prepare? There's two of your former Dallas Cowboys. I think they're former, Leonard Davis and Flozell Adams. That's one of my coworkers, Nate Weir. That's at the Pro Bowl. You have to be prepared to deal if there's an athlete that big. You say, Pepper, what are you talking about? Most of us are high school trainers or work in high school. I said, okay, how about that? That's a high school football player, or that high school football player, or whatever situation you're faced with. They are going to be big news. Kevin Everett at Buffalo. This becomes national news. It's going to be all over ESPN, especially in the NFL. But when there's a catastrophic injury, it's big news. And it may end up on the cover Sports Illustrated. In this case, it had to deal with using the cold IVs and whether that helped or not led to a lot more research. But next stuff was always big. Oh, this is my undergraduate. I looked a little bit different then. Yeah, that's 45 years ago. But Pinky Newell, you guys hear about scholarships and Pinky Newell lectures and like. Pinky was way, 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 this is my mentor. I was with him for my 4 years at Purdue. But Pinky was the first to design a board, even though a short board, with head stabilization. And think about this. These pictures are probably 50 years ago, still doing the same type of things. Not that this is dogma, but because it's tried and true, positioning the athlete, stabilizing the head, reversing the hands. Fortunately, we don't wear the good humor suits at on the sideline anymore. And I don't think you're using a pocket knife anymore to cut the grommets. Besides, you probably keep it in your pocket and try to get on a plane or whatever. That doesn't work out too well. But we were always taught that this is how the injuries happen, axial blows. And, sir, there are axial blows, but you're going to see some video that changes that a little bit. And Lord forbid any of us ever see anything like this, because this dislocation is really not compatible with life, because we always learned, and certainly in physical therapy school, C3, 4, and 5 help me breathe and stay alive. And I would say we'd have compromised breathing here and not a good picture. Been asked often, what's the worst I've seen? Not really a player. How about was a coach? And of all places, it was in Dallas in 96 at the NFC Championship game. And in the middle of the game, we have a full-on EMS response. And you'll see why here in a second. I believe if I activate my mouse, you might be able to see it, but you're going to see what happens here. It plays a few times. But this is a coach getting blown up by Robert Brooks, being tackled by Darren Woodson. You're saying, well, we didn't see much there, but now watches his head. Yeah, there's a few oohs in the audience right now. And this situation came close to tying us for just life and death situation. I mean, one of our doctors, this was right by our feet. I've got a pulse, I've got respiration, I've got the neck, and it's just changed our whole world on the sideline. And this was a contract coup where the brain rebounds within the skull. There was contusion front and back. He had an occipital skull fracture, which is the thickest part of the skull, and wonderful care at Baylor Medical Center. And his recovery was long, but he came back to work, but it took him 6 months. But that's during an NFC Championship game. Changes your whole attitude during the game. A tie for worst. This is an athletic trainer's worst nightmare. This is me in 1992, and you'll see some video of Dennis Byrd here. And the quarterback steps up into the pocket, and two rushing defensive linemen run into each other. And you'll see this behind the pocket, back over here. And, yeah, that went by quick, but there'll be a replay here. The thing for you to see, look at these arms. If you're looking at the mechanism of injury, you would note that that arm movement is not natural. There's lack of motor control there. And we're going to Dennis's side. And he said, Pepe, I can't move my legs. I've broken my neck. Well, as I say, this is why we get paid, to take care of those things and be able to act and react. Here's a couple from the Packer annals there with Sterling Sharp. You don't have to read all of this, but old history in 94, we go out onto the field. He has a four-quarter neuropraxia, and you see at the bottom, transient loss of conductivity, either compression, really tends to have spontaneous recovery. So it's kind of a retro diagnosis. When a guy's coming around, you start to call it a neuropraxia or a four-quarter burner. You'll see this. You talk about a benign impact. I know you didn't see much there, but as you're going to the field, you see that this is not normal, and I am screaming on the way out there, don't move them. and you'll see my hand come in, and I'm going to grab a face mask here. And you'll see this hit again. It's very, very benign. Well, there was, this wouldn't, something like that's happened to a player 1,000 times, 5,000 times. But to see that position on the field, he's obviously uncomfortable. How about the Atlanta Falcon guy trying to climb in underneath to see how his buddy's doing? But you know going out that that's not a normal position. What did we learn from this? What was the outcome? Well, he had this four-quarter burner, did the MRIs, but we'd made one mistake. We didn't do flexion extension, movement x-rays. But this was for the first division championship the next game in the Packers in 25 years. You guys get that in Texas. Sometimes the game gets into people's head. It's a bigger game in the whole community. We learned that the player might minimize the symptoms, and we failed to get motion studies. Anytime we have a neck, we always get flexion extension videos, flexion extension x-rays. He played the next week. I mean, our neurosurgeon saw him. He had cleared up. He had a perfectly normal neuro exam. But now you're going to see what happened the next week. And this is at Tampa. We're going to win our first division championship. And you see that his head is basically tried to be removed, I'll play it again, from his head by, you know, off his shoulders by a tackler here. And the opposing trainer, Chris Smith, was to him first, and he was complaining about a burner and on and on. That following, we did the MRI, we did the flexion extension, and we said he had chronic C1, C2 laxity. But here was the kicker, is the player walked by me and slapped me on my legs as I'm sitting in the athletic training room. Hey, I lied to you, I had tingling in my legs all week. And the doctor and I looked at us, our eyes about fell out of our head. Seasonal outcome is that he had a single level fusion. But here's the point, the atlas sits on top of the axis, and you say, okay, big deal, we've got that down. Well, you can see the pivot point. There's not supposed to be any motion there, zero motion. Basically, in Sterling's case, his atlas was falling off of the axis. It was moving argumentatively 7 to 8 millimeters, which most neurosurgeons will tell you is not real compatible with life because you're kind of self-compressing the spinal cord. Another one, 2005, went on the field, quadriplegic, weakness in all four. Terrence Murphy, all the athletic trainers in the audience are saying, oh my goodness, we see the hit, but what about his knee and his ankle? And you'll see some it's amazing he didn't dislocate his hip in this as well. But we went on to the field, and he was burning in all four. Of course, we're going to activate our EMS and our EAP. And the long and short of it, he had some history of this in college, and that changed our whole approach to it here as well. Studies, full workup, what did we learn from this? That there could be a long process of second opinions. Your athlete, your athlete's parents, they don't want to take no for an answer or that this is this and that. And your medical records and what you've kept becomes critical. And as I told you, look at the position of that ankle. Look at his knee and ankle up under him. And yes, he did end up having the knee scoped eventually after, but it could have been a disastrous leg injury as well. Tight end of Philadelphia, four-quarter stinger, and not a real dramatic hit, but we go out there. But you can kind of see the way he's reacting with his arms on the field that something isn't right when you go out there. And he was burning in all four. To us, if we have a stinger in one arm, we're cautious. But anytime it goes into a second extremity or anything goes into the legs, our rabbit ears, our antenna go way, way up. And Bubba did have rapid resolution. All the studies were normal. And he practiced later that week. And the thing that was very challenging is the fact this was an away game, how you handle it, et cetera. And he played the next week at Chicago. Doctors had all cleared him. Neuro consultants had cleared him. And who would ever think you'd have another hit akin to this, and it'll slow down. But most people's body would break in half if you were hit like this. Not only your neck, but your back. But you look at this picture, I said, my goodness, I can't move like that. I'd be a bag of bones. But this ended his season, kind of two strikes and you're out. And you know, those are things you can see, you don't need a video for, but, you know, we just wanted to learn. Every time we have one of these, we review it to say, what was our preparation? What did we learn? What can we do better? And this is a big boy, Tony Palmer, big, big offensive lineman. I think you might see my mouse here. He's going to be part of setting up the wedge, so to speak, and are going to break the wedge. And you might have seen that impact, but you will hear. Now, the interesting thing about this, here you go. It's the best film we had of it. He, I know it's fuzzy, but he walked off the field. We didn't realize there was any injury here. And until we get him on the sideline, and he's complaining about feeling like his neck is locked, and we did stadium x-rays. Doc thought they were suspicious, and off he went to the hospital. Now, probably under the current protocol, you probably wouldn't put him on a longboard, but overnight in the hospital, ended up with a single-level fusion, but never did return to play. What we learned from this is that huge necks get hurt too. Now, I would say his ears attached to his shoulders. And I'm joking, there's no way you hurt that neck. And here was just a profound thing. Ronnie Barnes at the Giants and I talked the next week. The two players that collided each broke their necks. The fellow at the Giants had a transverse process fracture. And whether it's, I say in air quotes, just a transverse process, that's still a broken neck. And for two players, just unheard of, that struck each other and didn't really get much press, but just fascinating. Here's one for you. You guys butt dial people on your phone. I don't know if you butt neck injury here, and you'll get what I'm talking about here with our Pro Bowl safety coming up against, let's see if we get this to play, and I'm going to back it up, see if it plays here, and you'll see this impact. And I don't care how good you are on the sideline, you're probably not going to see that. And when we slow it way down, look at that axial load. And again, I don't care how good you are on the sideline, you go out to the field and you've got a player that's not moving four extremities and burning and on and on. And you just say, wow, how can that? All the playing films, emergency there, taken to the hospital in Carolina. We went into their locker room after and looked at the MRI and like, oh no, just had a huge disc we knew had to be fixed, single level fusion. But what we learned is even what you see on the field doesn't seem to be that dramatic, but it can be. And the last one of neck stuff I'll show you here, and then we'll go into some of the tools, is a UT tight end, Jermichael Finley, went on the field and was really quadriplegic. He couldn't move anything from the neck down. Split out, you see him come across the field here, and not overly dramatic hit, but you start to see how the ball squirts out. Something just doesn't look right here. Like, he makes the catch and the hit, and that obviously the film follows this thing because they think it's a fumble, but you'll see here as we go back, you can see he's moving his head, but his arms are folded in an odd position here. And your response as you're going out is, you know, we're not going to be looking at his ankle. Something is wrong here. Is he unconscious? But you see him moving his head, crazy load, and you're like, this just can't keep happening to one team. This is kind of nuts. And full workups, huge disc, real slow recovery in this case, ended up with a single-level fusion, and everybody wanted to do different things. No surgery, this surgery, two levels, no level, on and on. And we went back to look at some of these films, and it looks like kind of a lateral blow, or the obligatory celebration. And this, where you're running out there, don't move them, scream and don't touch them. And, of course, the full-on response, and there you go. One as far as just one of the zillion things when you're talking about concussions, but no matter whether it's head or neck, you're still going to be practicing your CABs, cardiac airway breathing, and when in doubt, you're going to suspect like a spinal cord injury. Don Beebe in 97, yeah, that's a long time ago, but it's fascinating to watch this video and see if your eye picks up something that is not right. He is snoring right now, and the reason I say that is look at his right arm. Normally that would be folded down or whatever have you. That's a decorticate posture. He's out. He was out on impact. That arm is stiff. And the Cerevit versus the Corticit, the Corticit bent arm, a stiff arm like that. I'm not saying I'm some genius, but running out onto the field, I'm like, this is not normal. And there you have it. All of the workups in the hospital, but actually that happened early in the game. He was cleared to come home and missed a couple weeks. Well, played the second week and had no other issues with that. Head, neck, whatever, your train response. You know, or the question is, will your training change? This is the old protocol. It's history. And now the resultant change is no one goes into the ambulance. Back then, no one goes into the ambulance with a face mask on. That was our agreed to thing 15 years ago. Now we're starting to think maybe a little bit outside the box. Now, how are we doing this? And back with the NATA and Ron Corson's work, the Interassociation Task Force, is how are we dealing with it? Well, we wanted to get up to date with what EMS was doing. We wanted to reconvene the task force. And you saw these before. But number four is probably the only thing that we're taking note of, is equipment should or may be removed prior to transportation. These are the same recommendations I showed before. The question is how you're going to use a board, when you're going to use it. Does the equipment come off? These are Georgia pictures. Yes, a case can be made. What if you leave the equipment on and there's some type of cardiac emergency? Then you've got to deal with the equipment. And do you really want to be putting this on the ER staff, the ED staff, to be dealing with this, the emergency department? We always send at least one staff member with an athlete in an ambulance, but you're in high school, you may only be one of you. Or the head trainer doesn't want to leave. You may have some student help, and it becomes an issue. Is there room for discussion? Sure. And the issue is that, you know, if the camera's there over top of this, we don't need all this drama. We don't bring an ambulance onto the field. This is just, it's going to drive families crazy, teams, stands. Oh, boy, if we can avoid that. And there's an ever fine line. You guys are involved. There's no bigger football in your world than in Texas. And you've got press and people and the cameras, and you have to make a decision. Do you want to be doing all of this equipment removal in front of everybody, or do you want to do it in private in the ambulance? It's something you talk about with your EAP. Now, this is probably a little bit of a joke to you in Texas, but we played that Super Bowl in Dallas, and there was 8 inches of snow there. So you could end up where you've got really cold hands as a responder, and some of the stuff you end up dealing with, working with your tools, may be hard. You have to take that into mind. Is it pouring rain? Is it cold? Is your equipment all soaked? How are you doing it? And truly, maybe you didn't see it happen. Well, in the NFL, and who knows when this will trickle down, but this has been great publicity for athletic trainers. But an athletic trainer spotter, a certified athletic trainer, is up watching our games and can be giving us feedback, and they literally can call the official and stop a game. And we can go to a video replay and see those things I showed you in slow motion. We still bring in outside consultants, and we go through and do all of this stuff to practice. And you're never an expert in your own house. We bring in outside people. We practice and we try. We bring our EMS in. We bring whatever doctors can come in. And this has become a valuable thing to do and to talk about. What if this? What about these pads? All right, let's practice. And it's not us. It's the doctors with a mandated video scope, a laryngoscope, if they have to tube somebody. And they said, hey, how about we take that out into the sun and see how that scope works? They say, you know, we can't see the screen. And say, good to know. Help isn't always there. No one knows that better than you. Practice, certainly at a game, whether you've got contracts, but practice, you're going, we won't have this kind of help. And then you'll look at your own equipment. At one time, we had put bigger wheels on our stretcher. The dilemma with that, it doesn't snap into an ambulance. So now they've got all of these electric rigs and on, and they work well, but the wheels don't roll well on grass. Complicating factors, no one has more than EMS. Now, for me, I've had missing tools, corroded hardware. My hands have been ice cold. We had mud where the board was sinking down into the mud. And you're laughing about number five there. Wrong ambulance. Are you kidding me? Yeah, we had a player with a kidney contusion. He had hematuria. Our athletic trainers walk out of the Philadelphia locker room, and the guy in the ambulance sitting right there says, you need a ride? I said, yeah, we have to go and get a CT scan. Ended up being the fan ambulance, went to the wrong hospital. How about that? And we've since handled that situation. But EMS, oh my goodness, for them, I mean, a football game, a little bit of rain and cold is no challenge for them. God bless them with everything they do. We admire them to no end, and there's no reason why we don't have great working relationships. How they handle head stabilization, Pinky was way ahead of his time with emergency equipment. How you do it, what they choose to use. I don't particularly like this kind of strap. If the helmet's wet, that Furno strap can slip off. We're not big on taping a head down. And a lot of you've never even seen this board. It's come and gone a little bit, but it's basically a moving sidewalk. It crawls under the athlete. It was brought to us to try, and I immediately said, you're trying to stabilize a bowling ball on a lane. You can't do it. I mean, how are you going to stabilize the head? And they looked at me cross-eyed, and we came up with our stiff board. We would attach one part of a head stabilization unit. And now we've come to the fact that we actually glue a ring of soft foam onto our board, because if you're maybe putting a helmet there, of course, with a face mask off, but it doesn't stabilize well on a hard surface. So, yeah, you can tape them and you can use towels, but is it a moot point? I mean, everybody's saying the equipment's supposed to come off. Well, once again, if it's bad weather, other factors, not enough help, you're going to end up stabilizing the helmet. It's the best you can do. Well, with that mechanized board, I came up with a neoprene strap, which is basically a knee strap. It's a knee support that I reverse the Velcro on. And you could see the way it could wrap around any side of a board. And I love the way it grabs a helmet. Neoprene, you know how kind of sticky it is. And in this case, you can see that. So Pro Orthopedics have these on the market. They're like $12 or $14. No, I get no money of it. I mean, I think a dollar of it, some goes to the NATA scholarship fund. But we have these things all over the country, and they work great for us. And they can catch the front edge of that helmet, and it just works like a champ. EMS has got them on some of their rigs here. Sure, you can use towels, but when we take all of our equipment, we even have some rolls at the end of that board, what looks like the head of the board, to use with the helmet. There's that big strap. People used to use sandbags, and EMS sandbags are gone. Sandbags have the chance of moving something a little more than you want to. And this was another. All of you athletic trainers are inventors. We just took a neoprene shin sleeve and put soft foam into it, and we made our own foam blocks. And with that strap, they work like a champ. And even if you don't have the helmet on, that strap works great. Well, we've been going for 40 minutes or whatever, and we've nuts, bolts, and screws. Well, our equipment guy does a magnificent job of checking our helmets every week. And it's been more than a decade. We all decide in the NATA, if someone goes into a rig, bus, whatever you're going to call the ambulance, the face mask is going to come off, because who knows if there's going to be a respiratory issue. But the bottom line for you sitting in your seats, if you're not particularly good with tools or know how to handle a power screwdriver or a cutter, you may want to hand that off to somebody else. Now, realize how pliable a helmet gets when you take a face mask off, especially the new thin shelled. But also realize that if you're excited in an emergency situation and you take that face mask off and you get really excited and pull on that helmet, you actually squeeze down anterior posterior on the head, and that's not going to be a good situation for pulling that helmet off. So a little calmness, easy, roll that helmet off. Dealing with all of the different loop straps that are out there, sure, we've got reverse straps, we've got double straps, the quick release single is more popular. This on the Revolution helmet is a bear to deal with if you can't get it off with a screwdriver. All of our hardware now in our building is stainless steel. I hope it is in your world, but some helmets are not going to have stainless steel. You put a screwdriver in it, and you know the situation. It's not going to come off, and you have to be able to deal with it. We have about 25% quarter turns, 75% quick release. We have no screw hardware currently on our team, but you need to assess your team. you're asked to fill in for somebody, what the makeup of that team is, what tools you have access to, we carry all of these. That's our kit. It's on all of our spine boards. And we take tools with us if we get into the ambulance, if that helmet is not been taken off or the face mask, or as I said, that's a little redundant. If something weird happens, you've got to make sure you have tools. This is my quick release tool. If you look to the far left with the arrow, that's nothing but a mini screwdriver that I cut the end off. Or the one in the top center, that's a coat hanger with some Power Flex wrapped around it. And I've got those in all of my tools. So if I want to poke that quick release, it's going to work quick. Sure, I carry a power screwdriver. That's why I've got a fanny pack. But even if the battery's dead, it still functions as a screwdriver. Yeah, I feel like a Boy Scout. I've got a multi-tool with me. But then again, after a game, you never quite know if you need that multi-tool. Trainer's Angels, I love it. But you have to have some dexterity to be able to do it, to cut some of the old-fashioned loop straps off. And you can get those off, but realize there's still a block of plastic you have to deal with. Some helmets don't have loop straps at the top. You've seen the SpeedFlex. And now the helmet with the quarter turn on that top bar where you don't have to take any loop straps off. And we carry one of these FMX extractors, the one on the bottom right. It's a little pricey, but when you're dealing with these wacky four poly hold blocks, this has to be cut four different ways to get it off. So you would be very, very fortunate if the screw comes out or a quick release comes off, because to cut that bare on both sides, that's a long process. A lot of different face masks, old school, they used to be bolted to helmets, but we basically use about eight different face masks, and every week they get checked. That looks like a regular face mask till you realize that is the same face mask left and right in the blow that a player took to split that thing open. And that would make your helmet fit very differently, other than the fact that that blow did concuss him and it became a moot point because he's out of the game. All the different chin straps, my goodness gracious. Now, I don't know if you're allowed to have any screws, but so many of our players want their upper strap on a screw. We get rid of most of our metal straps, our metal clips, but not all simple straps. With the Zenith helmet, it's part of the tightening for the whole system, and you've got the ratchet release down on the bottom left there. Long and short of it, you've got to know what equipment's on your team, and especially if you're filling in or helping someone else. All of us know how to get a helmet off, whether you use a tool to snap out the chin pads, but the hands go in, stabilize, don't spread that helmet too much, roll it off, and you can see if you had done that, it's not going to come off very easily. And again, I don't know your world down there, but in the NFL, no fun league, as we joke, that clear shields are okay. We're not allowed to really wear tinted shield. It takes an act of Congress. And these overbuilt face masks are, as they would say on the TV shows in New York, forget about it. It's not happening. But if you've got to deal with them, that's something that I'm not prepared for because I don't see them anymore. Whether we have clear shields, the dark shield they can wear in practice, but in the game we don't wear those. And there's so many things that are written on how to safety remove it, but you all got that down. But the question is this kind of stuff, dealing with shoulder pads, nice soft cloth, easy. Well, cut it, split it, no problem. We like to have people gently elevate the person at the head is in charge, and we roll the shoulder pads up into the head rescuer, the head stabilizer's belly, and then simply pull them out. That's how we do it. Now, sometimes you got soft straps, easy to cut, soft plates, a rubberized plate, and we're going downhill here because I don't know if in your world, our offensive linemen wear these solid poly plates, and that is not an easy thing to cut. So we've got cutters, as you'll see, the tin snips there, and you may not have the best tools. So what you would do is stabilize from the chest up and actually pull the shoulder pads off, elevate, whether you've cut them or not. And I've done this in emergency room. We didn't have a tool. I asked if I could use their cast cutter, told the player I was going to make a little noise, and you can just cut that breastplate very easily. The ripcord was out. I don't know if anybody's using them. We've experimented with them a little bit, but they're not on our team. Collars, Oh, my goodness. That's a whole nother subject. What collars? What's the best collars? We tend to use these ones that fold up flat and our choice. But here's your take home on the polystyrene beads. We love these splints. But realize if you put one of these splints on an ankle, a neck, or wherever, and you send the athlete in the ambulance or into a doctor's office or whatever to get x-rays, and they want to reuse that splint to take them now somewhere else, where's that pump? The pump probably stayed with your equipment. And that's why we carry two pumps. One pump stays with the bag. The other pump goes with the athlete. And this is just, it's like, I never thought about that. But we didn't until we were in the ambulance with a broken ankle and we needed to reposition that splint. Well, as we say, it's time for me to shut up. And Natalie, can, if you want to ask a question or tell me how stupid I am, we can flip it and we can you can ask a question or two. But your take-home message is, we got to think, got to plan. I mean, this is a very deep subject here. I mean, I'm joking. I mean, think, plan, practice, communicate. You have to consider the unexpected. So we did 278 slides and 13 videos, and praise the Lord for the technology that it seemed to work. My timer says 59 minutes and 33 seconds, but that's actually why we're setting this up. But if any of you all have questions or say, what about this or that, I'm glad to answer it. And this is not a slam against the New England Patriots, but I've told so many people when they say, what do you do for a living? I said, there's a lot more to the game than blowing up the ball. So I really, really appreciate you letting me do this from a long way away. I don't miss your 100 degrees today. And if anybody has any questions, I'm all ears. Anybody have anything, Natalie? You know what? They want to go over to you're going to Cobbleheads for lunch. Get out of there. Well, I appreciate all you guys, everything you do in regards from Lambeau Field.